Up next for us, William Henry, as we talk about portals and other mysteries throughout the universe on Coast to Coast AM. William Henry, our guest, just back from the incredible Dreamland Festival, where Ann and Whitley Strieber put on a great show. Jim Mars, Linda Moulton Howe as well in Nashville, Tennessee. He's going to be going to Egypt, of course, sometime in 2009, looking at the Stargate Mystery School. Here he is this hour on Coast to Coast. Hello, William. How are you?
Terrific, George. How are you?
Life is good, my friend. Everybody's fine.
Great to hear your voice. Thank you for calling.
Now, tell me a little bit about what happened this weekend. How did that go?
Oh, it was phenomenal. We had a huge turnout here in Nashville. As you mentioned, Ann and Whitley Strieber were here, Jim Mars, Linda Moulton Howe. We all had a conference here and just had a wonderful time.
Jim Mars is a giant with what he does, isn't he?
He's the legendary Jim Mars. I mean, he is absolutely incredible. I mean, just mesmerizing speaker. Nobody knows what's really going on like Jim Mars.
And, of course, you do your own phenomenal job with your work in portals and other areas of mythology. What was your topic this weekend?
Well, of course, it's always kind of a spinning around portal somewhere. And actually, I was just kind of focusing this time because of such the financial crisis that so many people are feeling. I focused a little bit on that during these times, we always have to be pointed north, and that is towards activating or awakening that sort of divine connection that we all have, and recognizing that we're here not to worry about money, but to focus on developing ourselves as spiritual beings and connecting with the stars.
You know, you're right. I mean, there are some people out there that are going to lose their jobs. Some people are having a tough time finding work, William. But, you know, by and large, I think if you really keep that attitude positive in even trying times, you're going to be better off.
There's always tremendous opportunity no matter what the situation is. And so we've got to keep ourselves, again, always reaching for the stars.
Tell me about Stargate Egypt 3. What's going on there?
Well, it's really shaping up. It's starting to fill up. In fact, we're going to be doing a major tour of Egypt, looking at specializing, of course, on the various temples as stargates. The temples of Egypt, when you look at those were not places where people went to worship. They went there to do work. They went there to do the soul work that would prepare them for entering these gates that are located on Earth that lead to various star systems. And so we'll be exploring them in depth.
Tell me about your definition of a stargate.
Well, there's actually two. I mean, I think of the body itself as a sort of a stargate, because from this perspective, it is actually our soul, or what the Gnostics referred to as our divine spark, that is always traveling throughout the stars, throughout the universe, and then the body itself becomes a sort of a portal. And so you've got the literal gate of the body, but then you also have these gateways or portals that are spread throughout the planet that receive star energy from particular systems, be it the Pleiades or Orion or even the center of the galaxy. But then there are also other gates that are literal teleportation systems that take you from point A on Earth to point B anywhere else in the stars.
Now, these portals that are they on the planet, and are they strategically located throughout the planet Earth?
I always go back to Plato, George, because he said, when he reintroduced the story of Atlantis, he said that if you could see the true Earth from afar, it would appear as a 12-angled pyramid, as a dodecahedron. Then, like, for example, the local legend here is the Cherokee legend. They talk about these same portals or vortexes and say that there are 12 of them spread strategically around the planet. So that corresponds with Plato's description of the true Earth, that there may in fact be an overlay or a superimposed system of these gateways over the planet. And if you think about it, Plato may have been even indicating that the original concept of Atlantis did concern these fully functioning portals or gates, and that there in fact might have been 12 of them.
If you stumble into them physically, what happens to you?
Well, if a portal is on and you stumble into it, I get reports all the time, George, people emailing me saying that they have gone through these portals, they have actually experienced these portals themselves, that they were in Egypt, for example, or they were in Iraq, and they went into the wrong place at the right time, and they were teleported. I can't substantiate this in any way yet, but I'm getting these reports all the time.
Is it like time travel?
In a way, it's like time travel, yes. I mean, when we're talking about, there's one of my favorite stories in ancient Egypt involves the king Seti, who is said to have been one of these beings who could teleport himself between dimensions, so that there you're talking time travel, and also between places, so it does involve time travel.
It is amazing that one day physicists will pick up on this. They haven't yet. You have, others have, who are mythologists who have studied this. Why isn't science backing this up yet, William?
Well, you know, I guess they're just coming into this kind of consciousness that it's possible. Dr. Michio Kaku has a new book out called Physics of the Impossible,
right,
in which he talks about teleportation, that might even be possible. And he cites a story from the book of Acts in which a figure appears to teleport with the assistance of a spirit being. And he says, well, here's an example in the ancient world, in the Bible, which might be the first instance of teleportation.
You know, William, remember the movie Contact?
Yeah,
Jodie Foster went through wormholes in order to travel through the universe. Is that what we're talking about? I mean, is that, I'm trying to picture these portals that you talk about. Is it like that? Is it like a wormhole?
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're talking about. When Carl Sagan first revealed this concept in the book Contact, and then the movie is made, it gave us that total visual immersion in this concept that permeating the known galaxy or known universe are these wormholes that underpin all of reality. The difference in kind of my perspective on it and then what you see in movies like Contact or Stargate is that I don't think our physical bodies necessarily are going to be able to be accessing these wormholes. I think that it's going to be in more of a transcendent form that we'll be able to use them.
So we might not necessarily have machinery to get us through them.
Right. And that is the big question of whether or not we're actually ever going to be able to open the mouth of a wormhole large enough for a human body to enter into it. But when you look at the ancient stories, they weren't necessarily focused on the human body itself going through the gates. They were talking about the human body as sort of a transitional phase that enabled us to open the gates so that then our divine spark, as they called it, or our soul could actually travel through it.
You have your finger on consciousness. I mean, you've done this all your life. You've looked at it. A lot of your speaking engagements are based on consciousness. I think people have called you one of the most dynamic speakers in the field of consciousness
mm-hmm.
today. Are you beginning to sense, by talking to other people, that there's something afoot here? Because we're beginning to feel as if something very big, I don't know what it is, it could be the greatest enlightenment of all time, or it could not be, but something major is afoot here.
Not only is something major afoot, but I think that it's accelerating. And what I see are two major trends that are converging right now. One, we're opening up to the realization that we're not just focused on the sun and our solar system, that in fact everything that happens on Earth is relative to what happens in the center of our galaxy. So we're becoming more galaxy-centered or galactic-centered beings. And at the same time, we're experiencing this huge shift from purely organic beings to partly silicon-based beings. We're starting to recognize that we're able to use computer technology to accentuate our capabilities. And so when you put those two trends together, that to me seems to be a huge part of what's driving this transition right now.
Does any of this have anything to do with 2012, William?
I think it has everything to do with 2012 because, of course, the Mayans are describing, or in our interpretation of what the Mayans said about 2012, they anticipated that a portal or a stargate would be opening from the center of the galaxy, and from out of that wormhole would emerge an enlightened being or a group of enlightened beings. And so here we are right at this time of transition with the idea of the stargate or the wormhole as at the apex of our consciousness and at the apex of our science.
Do we have the ability to close the portal doors?
That's a very good question. I mean, some people say that we can, and others say, you know, it's kind of out of our control. I mean, I personally think that we're coming on a time now where we have the ability to do that. Again, I referenced Dr. Kaku. He thinks that we're still a type zero civilization, that we're at least 1,000 years away from becoming a civilization that would even be anywhere remotely close to being able to access these gates. But I think we're right on top of it now. And the reason I think that is because, like, when you go to the temples of ancient Egypt, you'll look on the astronomical ceiling and you'll see the gods traveling on their ships of eternity. And the way the ancient Egyptians portrayed those ships is exactly the same diagram as the way modern science portrays a wormhole. And so my take is that we wouldn't be able to understand what that symbolism is unless we were at a level of consciousness of those who actually made that symbolism. Well, the Egyptians said that those who are portrayed in those stargates and wormholes were actually light beings, that they're a vastly advanced civilization that were here thousands and thousands of years ago, and the description of that civilization matches at least a Type II civilization, a civilization that has accessed or can harness the power of the black hole at the center of our galaxy, and in fact has a galactic perspective, not an earthbound perspective.
Could they have come from Atlantis?
They could have come from Atlantis, but then when you look at the Egyptian version of the story of Atlantis, and remember the story of Atlantis did come from Egypt, when you look at the Egyptian version of the story of Atlantis, they describe the founders of Earth civilization as, in fact, light beings. So it's all kind of gets dovetailed together there once you start peeling back the onion.
Now, in your opinion, what is a light being? An extraterrestrial or something angelic?
No, well, an extraterrestrial, definitely.
Okay.
That's what we're talking about.
From a system, another dimension, another universe, another planetary system?
The Egyptians said they came from and returned to a place they called the field or the dimension of the blessed. This is kind of the original conception of heaven. They also talk specifically about star systems such as Sirius and Orion. So we're talking about beings that can toggle between dimensions and also can travel between the stars.
And this travel between the stars is done through meditation? Or what kind of knowledge do you have to possess in order to travel this way?
Well, when they portray the gods traveling, especially like in ancient Sumeria, which is also connected with Sirius, they portray them in winged discs, winged rings.
So some kind of craft.
It's some kind of a craft, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's metallic. It could be a biological craft.
You know, when we get these phone calls from people that claim to be time travelers, or when people talk about time traveling, do you think it's possible that time travelers will come back, and that we may end up really talking to them?
I think it's entirely possible. I mean, that's part of the dialogue right now about the particle accelerator at CERN, that they might open up a wormhole large enough for something to come through, and that 2008 will now become year zero, the baseline, because that's what's needed is the invention of time travel to happen in our era, so that then future time travelers will be able to return to our time. So, and I mean, scientists are making that's part of the whole dialogue right now, that is becoming more and more possible.
I hope that those dire predictions don't come true.
Oh, of course, I know. We don't want a black hole suddenly gobbling up the Earth like Pac-Man or something. I mean, I don't think that's a very minute possibility at this time. But it is a possibility.
There's a camp of scientists that say not to worry, nothing's going to happen. Yet there are some other scientists, we've had a few of them on our program, who really think it could be a problem.
I know. And it's unfortunate, though, that it's not enough a part of the public dialogue right now. But it should be, because that is a minute possibility that something like that could occur. But what is also very important to recognize here is, as you mentioned, is this idea of consciousness, that now this is another direct evidence of this awakening of consciousness, this expansion of consciousness. we've been teething on Einstein. It's as if we've been in kindergarten for a long time, and now we're getting ready to get into first grade, cosmically speaking. And what that means is we're going to have more total control over the elements, and which will ultimately mean more control over our destiny.
It's huge also, William. I've never seen it at this point where people are so tuned in, just tuned in.
Yeah, I mean, every day there is this incredible sense of expectation that something is going to happen. And I think that we are going to start seeing probably something. I'm always, of course, looking for an event in the stars, because that a huge event in the stars, because that's something that everyone will experience or can experience.
You're talking about like an asteroid strike?
Well, not necessarily an asteroid strike, but perhaps the discovery of another major planetary discovery, or perhaps something coming from the center of the galaxy even.
Well, that's possible too. Well, I got to tell you, the subject matter that you have investigated over the years, truly a magnificent job that you've been doing, William.
Thank you.
What's new for you? What are you going to do after the Egyptian? Is there anything in between?
Well, actually, I'm finally getting up to James Gilliland's ranch. I'm going up
there.
When
are you going to be there?
This 4th of July weekend.
Oh, I can't get up there that soon, but I have to get up there this year. I've made a personal pledge to them. That I'm going to be there, and if I don't, I think they're going to come down and kidnap me.
Yeah, I've been wanting to go up there for years, and so finally I'm flying up there this weekend for the 4th of July. James has a big conference going on
Do you have a little video camera?
Yes, I do. I'm taking it with me, too.
All right, if you get anything, get us some of this video, and we'll put it up on the website.
You can bet on that, because I am definitely going with the expectation that I'm going to see something, because that's what I've been told, and I can't wait to get up there and experience that.
And you have to find out if we're seeing satellites or if there's really something very unusual going on up there.
Well, I mean, because that's the thing. I mean, when the footage that I've seen, it appears that you have the metallic-type craft, but what I'm more interested in is the biological craft, because so many of the ancient wisdom traditions talk about these beings who are able to alter their body, and the way that they portray them is as these concentric rings of energy that are able to pulse and to change their form. And that's exactly what you see in some of the footage up at James's place, at his ranch there in Trout Lake, Washington. And so I'm very excited to get up there and have a personal experience with this kind of craft.
When you get to Egypt, and you've been there several times, have you ever tried to find out what could be at the Hall of Records, the base of the Sphinx that Edgar Cayce talked about?
I'm always interested in that. I mean, that whole area there is just so steeped, it just oozes mystery right out of the ground. Because you're standing in an area, you've got the Great Pyramid behind you, you've got the Sphinx right beside you, you've got that red granite altar stone in between the paws of the Sphinx, and then right in front of the Sphinx and that altar stone is this enormously ancient temple called the Sphinx Temple, or the Valley Temple, that is clearly at least 10,000 years old. And you just know that you're dead center, or at the zero point of a huge, enormous, ancient mystery that has yet to be fully solved.
William's website is williamhenry.net, and I invite all of you to get up there and take a look at some of the things that he's doing, and still doing some great artwork with Dana, too, aren't you?
Every chance I get.
That is good. William, I'm going to keep you for another 30 minutes for phone calls. Can you do that?
Fantastic. Thank you.
We'll do that. And everyone give you an opportunity to talk about your understanding of consciousness, these portals that we've been talking about as well. WilliamHenry.net is his website. My email address, if you need to email me, is george@coasttocoastam.com. Tonight, floating format night. So just about anything goes. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Stan Deo joins us as we talk about earth changes. We'll be back with your phone calls with mythologist William Henry next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here's a question for you, William Henry. Your take on consciousness, what do you think it is?
I think the everything is conscious. It's alive, and there's an intelligence inherent in everything that we refer to that as the mind of God. And in fact, that's what the search for the God particle is all about, is the search for actually a missing piece to our theory of the universe. And what we hope to be able to do is to literally read the mind of God. And so I define consciousness as the intelligence that is in everything.
All right, to the phones we go. We've only got William for just a half hour as we float the format tonight. Deb in South Dakota, you're up with us. Hey, Deb.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, taking my call, and I couldn't agree with you more, but you talked a little earlier, William, about silicone and how that ties in with the future and the machine part of it and the intelligence. And I have to say, I have Morgellon disease and I have a lot of silicone in me that scares me to death. What's your take on that?
Oh yeah, I am at a point where I'm thinking, well, we are in such a process of transition here that there really is a choice that I think we're all coming upon here, that we're either going to take the chip, so to speak, within the next 3 to 5 years and become more like more Borg-like beings, or the other choice is, and the only other choice I can see, is that we're going to, I call it morphing, because in various traditions they talk about us transforming ourselves into ascended beings or light beings, or perfecting our bodies in this way, becoming more pure-hearted beings. And it just is getting scarier all the time at the acceleration of how we're beginning to put this technology into our body without really, really at the expense of our spiritual selves. And I'm looking at this and saying, well, is there an ET connection to it? Because as we all know, there was such an acceleration of the technology after the Roswell crash, and it appears as if, from many people's perspective, that much of this technology was back-engineered from ET-type stuff, and you just have to wonder if, in fact, it is ultimately some kind of a trap, or if we're going to actually be able to transcend this condition. But remember, though, I try to play devil's advocate, look at both sides of it, balance it out. There was an invention by an anonymous Italian inventor in the middle of the 13th century, early 14th century, that caused the church to really go just crazy over this invention. That invention was eyeglasses. And the reason why the church didn't like the invention of eyeglasses is because with it came the idea that the human body was improvable.
Yeah.
And so, ultimately, when we're talking about technological appendages, it all goes back to this idea that we're thinking of ourselves as being able to improve the human body. And that is the underpinnings of the philosophical argument here about, wow, do we want to turn over our bodies to Apple and Microsoft and allow them to turn us into iPods? Because that is what is happening.
Yeah. Well, I know there's a lot of people that are really scared about Morgellons, and I think my faith is going to save me, but I don't, I just pray that everybody else can get through it that way, too, and I thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I think we can get through it, William, if we have the right attitude.
That's exactly right, but we have to, what we need at this time, it's kind of, we're kind of like it, you talked about Contact, the movie Contact earlier. Another movie I love to talk about is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Yes.
That's when they're looking for the Holy Grail. And there came that point in the movie towards the end when the Nazis learned that where the Holy Grail was hidden, and they shot Sean Connery and told Indiana, now go get the Holy Grail and you can save your father's life, because Sean Connery was playing Indiana's father. And Indiana came to that moment where he was on one side of a precipice, that huge gap, and the Holy Grail was hidden on the other side of the gap. And the only way for Indiana to get across there, he had to take a single step of faith. And he took that step and found that there was a solid but invisible bridge linking the two sides. Well, the reason Indiana took that step is because he knew that if he did that, he could save his father's life. And he was literally in a life and death situation. And what he had at that moment is something that I think we need just a little bit more of right now, and that is not just faith, but also motivation. We have to know what is on the other side of 2012? What is on the other side of the present chaos and crises that we're involved in, and put our heart, energy, and emotion on what is on the other side? And we need that very compelling vision right now of where we're going with this.
Indeed. First-time caller line, Stephen in Texas. Hi, Stephen.
Hey, George. How's it going?
We're great. Thanks.
Yeah, I have a question for William Henry. I'm actually a philosophy major, and I'm working on a paper right now about the possibility of a spiritual reincarnation and the possibility of a heaven existing at the same time. And I thought William Henry would be a good person to ask about this. He talked about spiritual teleportation. Do you believe it's possible to teleport spiritually whenever you die to different planets or different locations or even different times?
I absolutely think that's possible. In fact, as I mentioned earlier, especially in ancient Egypt, where we found the foundations for so much of Western spirituality, that's what they went to those temple workshops to learn to do, to consciously die. And what by that, I mean they knew where they were going in the afterlife or in the interlife, and had actual maps and techniques. Jesus and Mary Magdalene, when they're from the Gnostic perspective, when they're writing the Nag Hammadi scrolls, and they're talking about the afterlife. They're talking about a cosmology in those texts, as if what it was all about for them was literally trying to come up with a map for how to transcend into the afterlife.
Do you think that has anything to do with the pineal gland?
I think that the pineal gland plays a very important role for us, especially when we're in the body, because it literally is a receiver and transmitter of off-world energies and frequencies that literally, if we can open up that pineal gland, it's sort of like a manufacturing plant of these secretions or oils that our body can produce, and it's those secretions that actually contain the secrets of transcendence, of the secrets of transmuting the human body in preparation for traveling through vortexes or portals or stargates, however you want to term it.
Did it take you a while, William, to determine that there was indeed a separation between mind and brain?
I learned that early on because in my early 20s, I started reading everything I possibly could about neuroscience and how the brain works and what the connection is between the mind and the brain. And I was very fortunate because when I first started doing this research, we started talking about the holographic brain and this concept that each of us are essentially a fragment of the whole, and that each of us, as a consequence of that, has access to the knowledge of the whole, which meant we could literally tap into the consciousness or mind of God, because that is exactly what we are.
Next up, let's go to east of the Rockies, Elma in Ohio. Hi, Elma.
Hi. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Sure thing.
It only took me 5 years to get through. I've been living in a home for the last 5 years, and I enjoy watching sunsets. And it always went down between two trees. The tops of them looked to be about 50 foot apart. But starting early this spring, it seemed to come up come over the house so that it went down on the left-hand corner. The house faces south. It came down on the left-hand corner, and then it moved the set of the sun now, is what I'm talking about. Then it started coming down so that it hit the opposite side, which was over 45 feet away. Now, that is a really long swing.
It is a long swing.
Yeah, it is. And I'm wondering why nobody's saying anything about it. And I'm wondering if that's got something to do with this 2012 come up. Because if the Earth's getting ready to switch her poles again.
Well, it is switching slowly, William, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and gosh, I've never heard anything like that before. That is really interesting. I have to take a look. Have to take a look into that.
What happens if we do a total pole flip? Instant death?
It could be. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about just the entire planet just flipping on its axis, and it's devastating, according to people like Velikovsky and others that have written about this, as claiming it's happened in the past. It's just an instantaneous global cataclysm that just basically wipes everything out.
Let's go next, west of the Rockies. Robin.
Hi. Hey. How you doing, George?
We're good.
I just had a question for your visitor there.
The visitor from somewhere.
From somewhere. Well, that's where I feel like I'm from somewhere. Anyway, I was wondering, earlier you were talking about a portion of the Bible that, where someone was teleported from one place to another.
Yes.
Okay, I know what scripture that is, and when you baptize someone. And you, when George asked you, did you believe that they were extraterrestrials or were they or were they angelic beings, you felt that they were extraterrestrial, correct?
Yes.
There's also another place in the Bible, in the Old Testament, where someone was taken up and gone from one place and never came back. You felt that, you said you felt that they were extraterrestrial. I was wondering, you also believe in angels and God? And
I look at the whole roster of beings especially in the Old Testament, in which you've got numerous instances of people, Enoch, Elijah, others that transcended the human condition and literally walk with God. I mean, Elijah is a figure that is believed to be reincarnating. Like, he's thought to have returned as John the Baptist, and messianic prophecy believes or suggests that he will return at an end time. The specific reference that I was referring to earlier with the teleportation was actually in the book of Acts,
right,
in which a person is at one place and suddenly he's at a whole other place. And the description of it, at least as Dr. Kaku interpreted it, suggested that he teleported from place to place.
Or translated as it's supposed to be. I heard that's the word that's supposed to be used. They're translated.
Yes, that's the word they use. They use translated, and when they're talking about the portals, they'll very often refer to it as a whirlwind. Elijah went into the heavens in a whirlwind. The book of Numbers is one of my favorite in the Old Testament that talks about literally the earth opening up and swallowing people, and then these people still being in some sort of inner earth realm. There's the story of Moses' cousin, Korah, who challenged Moses, and Yahweh came down and opened up a hole in the earth, as the book of Numbers says. And then when this Elijah figure returns, presumably, at least according to Jewish legend or messianic prophecy, Korah and 250 of his members of his group are still in the inner earth, because Elijah is going to open up the inner earth and release Korah and his band of followers.
What do you find to be the most fascinating subject matter that you've handled over the last few years, William?
Well, I'm starting to really just be completely intrigued by this whole idea of the transmutation of the body into a light being. I mean, this is that they call it the transfiguration, or metamorphosis is the term that the Bible uses for when Jesus takes the disciples up to the mountain and turns into light. Almost every tradition, especially the Tibetan tradition, talks about this capability within us, and it's as if, George, we're all in sort of like a pupil form. It's like we're in a cocoon, and we're all supposed to be transforming into, cosmically speaking, sort of these butterflies. But none of us are affecting that transformation. And so what I'm looking at and am deeply researching is, how does that occur? If we are in pupil form, how do we activate this capability within us and release that next higher level of human, which, again, is the metaphor is the butterfly. They also talk about the phoenix. But ultimately, what we transform into is into a light form that is capable of traveling the stars and able to toggle back and forth between the dimensions. And we have all of the capabilities of the miracle workers. We can walk on water. We can levitate. We can instantly materialize wishes. We can perform all of these incredible capabilities that we ascribe to beings that we refer to as masters.
Let's go to our wild card line, Kevin, California. Hey, Kev.
Hi.
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, it's pleasure to be on.
Thank you.
I have a question for your guest. It's the possibility of our spirits or consciousnesses existing in the fourth dimension, but are tethered to the bodies through a connection into the third, and they exist in the bodies while we're alive, and then once we die, they get pulled back into the fourth dimension. What do you think about that?
That's a very accurate kind of scientific description of what various traditions describe as the reason why we are here. The Gnostics, for example, say that we have a perfect self that remains at the source, in the center, at the point of creation, and that we send out sort of a double or a duplicate of ourselves into this realm in order to just come out and experience.
Yes.
And that when we drop our skin suit, that we will return to that place ultimately and reunite with our perfect self. And so there are very vivid descriptions of this in numerous ancient texts, especially the Gnostics.
Very good. You still looking for lost codes of myth and symbols?
Always. The woman mentioned the sun. I'm getting so many reports in the past few weeks, George, of people that are doing sun gazing, or they're working with the sun, and they're seeing more and more new symbols all the time. And this was supposed to be one of the manifestations of the whole 2012 phenomena, that we're going to have this new energy pouring or emitted from the center of the galaxy that travels through the galaxy and comes through the sun. And these cosmic rays emanating from the galactic center will trigger latent knowledge hardwired into our DNA. And it will at first be perceived as symbols. And this will then become the foundation for a new consciousness or a new body of knowledge.
Let's squeeze you in for a quick call, Anita in New York. Go ahead.
Yes. Can you hear me, George?
Yep.
Love your show and love you're one of my favorite guests. A very quick two-part question. Speak very briefly on the Dogon of West Africa and their, having knowledge of the Sirius stars before modern astronomers. And lastly, I just recently picked up, I have a copy of Plants of the Gods by Richard Evan Schultz and Albert Hoffman, who just recently made transition. Just from turning to a page and hearing Shaman Maria Sabrina, you know, in terms of her, and I'm not advocating this for Joe and Jane out there, in terms of her communion and ecstasy with, in her culture, the sacred mushroom. I'd like you to talk a little bit in terms of, just from a scholarship point of view,
Let's get his answer, Anita, because we've got like 25 seconds for you before we're at the top of the hour. So I'll let you listen on your radio. Dogon Tribe, get the book by Robert Temple, The Sirius Mystery. Very quickly, what do you think, William?
Yeah, there's no question that the ancients were using various plants as teachers, and that those plants had linked them with the stars and star beings.
William Henry, thank you so much. WilliamHenry.net. Up next, Stan Dale, Earth Changes on Coast to Coast AM.